This is a Triple J podcast.
Seeing that, like, actually I was in a good bubbly mood most of the month was actually so surprising because it feels so overwhelming.
ID with you for the Hookup podcast. And if you're new and you've never heard of us before, welcome. And this is where we talk about all things love, sex, dating and relationships. We have two episodes a week, one on Tuesdays with Poop and I, where we hear from you. And then on Thursdays, I like to delve a bit deeper into a topic, either with an expert or chat to someone about their story. And a couple of years ago, I did an episode on PMDD, which is premenstrual dysphoric disorder, with Dr. Teresa Larkin, who is a professor from the University of Wollongong. And we basically did a everything you need to know about PMDD. So just quickly, PMDD is something that impacts people who menstruate. It's similar to PMS, but a lot worse and an actual diagnosable medical condition. Some of the symptoms are depression, anxiety, anger, crying, paranoia, sleep problems, headaches, breast tenderness, acne, nausea, muscle pain, food cravings. And to be properly diagnosed with PMDD, you have to have at least five symptoms that start 7 to 10 days before you get your period. And then those symptoms have to go away after you start bleeding. And for a lot of people, it can be one of the most debilitating conditions and fully fuck with your relationships, your work, and your everyday life. And for some, you know, they can even become suicidal. So this is a bit of a heads up that we are going to be talking about that in this episode. And like I said, in that ep with Teresa, we basically looked at it through like a medical lens, right? But we have never actually heard from someone on the Hookup who actually experiences PMDD. So in this episode, you're going to hear from a new author called Emma Hardy. She's just released her debut book, Periodic Bitch. I love the title, which is all about her journey of experiencing PMDD, getting diagnosed, and the impact that it's had on her life, her career, and her relationships. It's such an incredible book. It's so well written. And, you know, it's not even just her story. She explores a lot of the myths and taboos that surround menstruation, as well as a lot of the history of quote unquote hysterical illnesses and the stories that we tell about women with conditions like PMDD. So let's get into it. Emma, thank you so much for coming into the studio.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Now, before we do chat about your experience, how would you explain PMDD?
So, I mean, like the offhand way that I usually talk about PMDD, which no doctor would particularly like, is I describe it as being like extreme PMS, because that's the language that most people have to talk about premenstrual illness. But the reality is that it's like PMS, but debilitating. So it affects like quite a few people. It's very underdiagnosed. When I was researching the book, I found that it's between like 3 and 10% of people, which is like who menstruate, which is a big gap of people. But it's like extreme irritability before your period in like the 7 to 10 days before your period, before menstruation, extreme irritability. You have suicidal ideation often, and you're unable to work, interpersonal conflicts with friends, families, partners. That's kind of like the big DSM criteria for it. For me, I just felt like I was crazy. It felt like I was out of control. It feels like I can't trust myself. And it feels like I might do something insane at any moment and be unable to stop myself. So like the feelings that I have before PMDD is this like kind of building of tension. And then afterwards, I'm almost fearful of what I could have done to myself or other people.
And so when did you realize that this was something that was related to your menstrual cycle? Because, you know, for a lot of people, and even just like, you know, people who experience PMS might just be like, oh, I just assume I'm like a moody person. Like it's so, to be able to link it to a particular part of your month, I think takes a lot of time, right? Like when did you realize that this was not just who you were?
It took me a really long time. Like I went in and out of different psychologists being like, I'm absolutely in tears, devastated. 1 week I'd come back 3 weeks later and I'd be like, I don't know what I was upset about. I'm feeling totally fine. And the psychologist would be like, that's amazing. SMART goals are really effective. And I just didn't know what was wrong. And then I went to one GP to get another mental health care plan. and another kind of luteal phase. This is this old man at a bulk billing clinic who just kind of wants me out in like 15 minutes. And he's like looking through the list of things that he can diagnose with me with, because it's not quite depression, it's not quite anxiety. And he's like, oh, maybe it's this thing, PMDD. And I just think this is the most sexist thing ever, that he's diagnosed me with this. He hasn't asked me any questions. He hasn't really diagnosed me. He just said it's probably related. If it's like cyclical coming back, it's probably related to this. So I kind of got that diagnosis. It felt kind of true, but I didn't really believe it, just because it seemed so unlikely that he could be right by diagnosing me so flippantly. And so it wasn't until 2020, when things got really bad, and obviously the kind of pressure cooker of COVID made my symptoms completely unbearable, that I started going through a proper diagnostic process, which the book kind of traces. So that was probably 5 years later that I realized, yeah, this is actually definitely it. And bizarrely, he was right. Like, ridiculous to think that, but he was right.
We'll talk about your, you know, your journey of trying to deal with it and treat it. But can you talk us a little bit about that pressure cooker of COVID and what you were experiencing and how you said it just got so bad? Because I think the thing that I love so much about your book was how raw and honest it was, but how, I guess, you really captured what that experience of being in lockdown could really have like impacted people's mental health. And you were experiencing a new relationship, you moved in together, which happened to so many people during that time. What were you experiencing and how were you feeling when you were like, actually, this has gotten really bad?
Well, I think obviously COVID impacted everyone's mental health. Like, I didn't have a friend who was doing their best or thriving during that time. But for me, it made that cycle even clearer. Like, and also because you're so pressure cooked in with other people, you're surrounded by other people, your housemates are always home, your partner's always home, that they're seeing you nonstop. There's no time for you to kind of step away and maybe self-regulate or even just like put on a different mask. Like, I actually thought about the fact that going to work, leaving the house, doing all these different or taking all these different roles throughout my day actually allows me to put on a different mask and pretend to cope. I know often people talk about masking as a really negative thing when we're talking about illness, that it's a forceful thing. But for me, I actually found it was like a bit of an escape from my feelings when I was really hormonal, because I could just play a role and wait for that time to pass. Because unfortunately, with PMDD at that point in my life, there was nothing I could really do other than wait for that time to pass. So COVID really took away those coping mechanisms. And it meant that if I had kind of forgotten how bad it was, well, everyone around me had witnessed it. And there was kind of no escaping it the next day when I felt better and I was ready to move on. And everyone's like, what just happened?
Yeah, you actually have to deal with the repercussions of what you've said, right? It's like you can't. You're like, well, I got my period, so I feel great. And they're like, you just said X, Y, Z, and now our relationship's ruptured.
And I'm like, did I though? Did I really say that? I'm not sure if that's true.
I think with PMDD as well, which is kind of what you said at the start of this convo, that it can look different for other people, right? It could be suicidal ideation. It could be like lots of anger. It could be violence. What were the things that you found were authentic to you about your experience with PMDD and your potential outlook on life or your moods?
I realized that I'm a very angry person. I don't think I ever would have thought of myself as being a really angry person until I was really forced to sit back and reflect on what happens when my moods are heightened. And I think a lot of that anger sometimes I let slip under the radar because I feel like it's justified as well. Like, there's a lot to be righteously angry about in the world. But I think that those feelings of irritability and anger really come to the front when I'm unwell. And that's kind of hard to grapple. I found that quite hard to grapple with, because I don't think it's necessarily wrong to be angry, but this kind of anger was becoming destructive. I did kind of fear at times that, like, not a violent person, but I did fear that because the anger was so strong in me that I could had that potential to be a violent person. And I think that was also a really confronting thought as well, is that, like, I don't know, we all want to think of ourselves as good people, but we all do have contain these multitudes within us. And when we're unwell and that's brought to the forefront and we're feeling angry, it's not the face that we want to see in the mirror.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you actually, a huge part of the book was you intertwining your experience, right, of this anger and sitting with that and realizing that about your cycle and yourself, also with like feminist horrors and the history of other women who have experienced, quote unquote, this is how it was historically called, like hysteria, right? Yeah. What did you discover looking into that kind of history and researching all these myths and taboos around women that maybe in hindsight actually probably just had PMDD?
Yeah, they might have just had PMDD, or they might have just been righteously angry as well. Like when we look at a whole bunch of female monsters, which I became obsessed with, because obviously I'm looking at myself in the mirror, I'm thinking, you're so angry, could you be violent? That feels like this monstrous feeling, this impossibility. And it just feels too big to be true as well. And I looked at like a whole bunch of different female monsters. And the things that kept coming back was that like they... or the things that they had in common tended to be that they either ate too much, they were devouring people or things or meat, they were too angry. So if you look at Carrie, she couldn't control her emotions on prom night when something horrible happened to her. She'd been bullied, she'd been picked on, and she got angry. And that is the moment where she becomes a monster. Before that, she's just a bullied woman. But when she shows that anger and it turns violent, she's crossed that threshold. She can no longer go back to being normal after that. She's a monster. Or yeah, they are angry, or they have too much pain. So like Medusa, the myth of Medusa, told a different way. She's a woman who was raped and people could no longer look at her because the amount of pain that she experienced felt like it was turning them to stone. So all of these myths of monsters that we have are really just like emotional women. And so I started to look at these myths, and I was thinking about the ways that I was feeling like I was an emotional woman, and how it kind of felt like society hates emotional women. We want to see them as monsters. We want it to be something to be feared, like feeling too much, becoming too angry, devouring too much, consuming too much. We want that to be like a parable of tragedy. We want that to be a monstrous thing that we avoid. And I started to wonder if my own anger might feel more manageable if I wasn't so scared of it. And I think that's kind of the question I was grappling with in the book as well, is am I actually scary because, well, this illness is terrifying, or is it the cultural ramifications of this illness and the expectations of femininity that are making this illness a lot more scary than it actually needs to be?
That's what I loved so much about the book.
Thank
it was
you.
Just such a beautiful exploration of that, and I think really delving deeper on something that, like, yes, it was incredible to read your story, but then to like actually unpack it even further and be like, no, but why do I have these thoughts about myself, and why do we have these ideas about women when, like you said, is it just a righteous anger that we hold for good reasons? And then I really liked how you explored the idea of how we've always kind of thought it was unfeminist to draw attention to moodiness or women being emotional or menstruation, and how leaning into that stereotype of, right, being unfit to work or, oh, careful, she's on her period. Like, yeah, you were really careful about how much you wanted to lean into that, but then how much it's such a tightrope, right, of being like, but maybe this actually is something we should be talking about more, right?
Well, yeah, it was kind of the thing where, well, one of my first awarenesses of this tension was like, oh, my mum would be so mad to hear that I'm like taking time off work because I'm about to get my period. Like, my mum would be so upset by that, because when she was going through the workplace, that's what she had men tell her all the time in the office, that like, oh, she's probably on her whatever. And she felt like PMS or PMDD were not PMDD, she didn't have the language for that then, but she thought that PMS was like a construct made by men to keep women out of work. And she'd kind of been pushing against that her whole life. And so then for me to be feeling so much stress and tension right before I got my period, it was kind of like I was a feminist nightmare, and it was like embodied in me. I think that whenever we have like a point of tension like that, it's not helpful to try and hide it or bury it, or I didn't find it interesting personally to try and hide it or bury it, because unpacking that tension is how we understand the stories that shape how we've come to understand the world. So, like, by unpacking the stories of, or by unpacking the tension of, is this like a feminist horror, or am I saying the taboo kind of anti-feminist thing of women are unfit for work? By unpacking that, I could see more clearly the layerings of like medical misogyny that made it harder for women to actually access treatment or have their pain be heard. And I could also kind of start to separate it from this kind of girl boss ideal of being able to be perfectly fit and functional all the time, especially in, I think you were saying this before, a 9-to-5 kind of workplace that's not actually structured to the ways that women's bodies are made or that our hormonal cycle actually functions. So I think I wasn't looking for a neat answer. I was kind of looking to figure out what stories shaped the ways that I saw myself, that I saw my body, and that I saw work. Does that make sense to you?
Absolutely. That's what I found so relatable, though, was that that's how I feel, that tension of being like, wait, I definitely have PMS and I definitely really struggle in those days leading up to it.
I just wonder, like, when should you push through?
Exactly. And I feel like so many women and people with uteruses just push through pain constantly because of that tension you're talking about, of not wanting to seem like they can't function at work, that they're unfit, and that they're, you know, haven't been able to merge into the classic just 9-to-5, I should be able to show up in the workplace the way that men do. Yeah.
But also, like, at home, the things that I was getting really angry about and that I needed to, though this phrase is so helpful, but it really pissed me off, of like sitting with discomfort. I had to practice sitting with discomfort. And I was like, how many women just sit with discomfort all the goddamn time? And here I am, and this is what's supposed to make me better, is sitting with discomfort. It made me so angry, and then I had to sit with that discomfort. But it would be like my partner would not do the dishes, or he would do them badly, or he would practice some kind of very normative male incompetence or laziness, really. And I would be so angry about it. And I think that anger is kind of justified. But at the same time, I didn't really want to blow up the whole relationship over, I don't know, him still being house trained.
With the sitting with the discomfort, that was one of your strategies that you learnt, right, about how to navigate your PMDD. Tell us a little bit about that journey, and when during COVID you decided, I want to do something about this now, what did you then do?
Okay, so this is kind of I ended up kind of structuring the book around this a little bit, which is I had that tension that we just spoke about not really understanding if this was true and that like I had this as an illness, or if I was just diagnosed by some man who was giving me a modern form of like a hysterical diagnosis. And so I really wanted to understand how hormones were actually affecting my body. So I kind of went through a 3-stage treatment plan. The first one was supposed to be 3 months of just raw dogging it, tracking my cycle. I'd been on and off different types of birth control, like many people have, since I was 15. And so I didn't really know what my underlying cycle was. And I hadn't had like an uninterrupted period where I could see what my body was actually doing in that luteal phase. And so I started that, and my doctor was like, no, we need to get your medication straight away. And I understand where she's coming from now, because I do have it. But I did really want to have like a more cooperative form of care when I was trying to understand my body and then choose the most effective treatment, or choose a treatment based on knowledge as opposed to guesswork. And so I did those 3 months, and then it was like super, super clear that I had it. The most surprising part for me was actually that I was happy some of the time. Like seeing, like obviously I knew that I was having these dips, but seeing that like actually I was in a good bubbly mood most of the month was actually so surprising, because it feels so overwhelming.
Well, the thing that I found so groundbreaking just quickly was also that you spoke about how memories and hormones play such a huge part in this, where you will all of a sudden have a really bad low and a moment with your luteal phase, and then you'll come out of it, you'll get your period, and then all of a sudden you'll forget, kind of like what you were saying before with your partner or whatever, but like how your memory would shift, and you'd be like, oh, I didn't even, like, what do you mean? Yeah. You don't remember how bad it got?
Yeah. So, my psychologist described it, and I think I described this way in the book as well, as being like childbirth, where like the pain is so intense that your body can't really stop you from experiencing that, but it can instead kind of save you from remembering the wholeness of it. So it's not like a complete forgetting, like I've woken up and I'm in a room covered in scratches like a werewolf or whatever. It's not like that. But it just feels like less forward. It feels like almost like a shadow of what happened. So I'll remember that I was like upset the night before. When pushed, I'll be like, oh yeah, that was like really bad. But I actually struggle to even like empathize with what I was feeling at that time, like my own, like the extremities of my own feeling. Like I can't really muster up that same tension in my body. And then when I'm in that tension, it's impossible to imagine not being that tense. I guess it's like possibly a metaphor for how we like definitely live in the present. But yeah, it's not like a total annihilation of memory, but it is recalling it is not the same at all as experiencing it.
So you did the 3 months, and then what was the plan from there?
So then I wanted to try a form of birth control that had been approved in America for treatment of PMDD, which was very bad for me. This was a pill called Yaz, and I didn't know exactly how bad it would be, but it really spiked my progesterone levels with hindsight, and led to an episode, a quite intense episode of suicidal ideation quite suddenly. And that really escalated my treatment plan after that. I needed to take time off work because of that. And I needed to find a way to get better. But I was also, with hindsight, it's like, I mean, hindsight is everything. Yeah. It was also quite scary, the thought of coming off the pill once I was on it, because I wasn't sure whether it was the change in hormones from adding or subtracting a medication, or if it was the pill itself that was making me feel so low. And even though I was depressed the entire time I was on the pill, it was like stable at that point, whereas going on it hadn't been stable at all. And yeah, it was just, I was so terrified of what I might do to myself. I didn't want to come off it. And risk having that kind of spike of hormones again, which my doctor was like, you're crazy. You need to just do it. Like, you need to just listen to my advice. And like, yeah, she's probably right. But yeah, then I eventually went on SSRIs.
And what was that experience like for you?
That was amazing. I was so scared of it, because you hear all these things about SSRIs messing up your sex life. And it did mess up my sex life. But the good news is that I no longer wanted to kill myself, which, I mean, is so much, like, it's not a good trade-off. And I think women are often given two bad hands to choose between. But I would choose that hand every single day. Yeah.
So where are you at now with your journey, Emma? So you are off the pill.
Mm-hmm.
Are you still on SSRIs?
I take SSRIs very minimally now. So usually, like, without the pressure intensities of COVID, with my partner being very understanding and having been through it so many times now, usually the DBT methods and being able to be in a workplace that allows me to take time that I need and have a more flexible structure around my cycle, I can manage it pretty well on my own. But I do take SSRIs, specifically Prozac, which is shown to be more effective for people with PMDD, because, I mean, you'll have doctors who will say this better than I can, but apparently it blocks some neurotransmitters that are... So PMDD is not about your body having off hormones or having bad hormonal balance. It's about the way that your brain reacts to those hormones. So Prozac operates on those neurosteroids that create that reaction. So the difference that someone with PMDD feels when taking Prozac, like I did, is you don't have to wait months for it to kick in. It like kicks in within hours. It's like you feel that straight away. So you can, or I do at least, take a small amount of Prozac just when I'm in that luteal phase. And that works. It's not the best, but that works best for me in terms of minimizing side effects. Yeah, and ensuring that I don't feel out of control or too upset. But yeah, I do feel like there's not really, it's like there's not a great treatment plan for it, to be honest.
It was, like you said, it's the most under-researched reproductive
and like
condition.
And to be fair, like I feel like quite a bit of frustration about this, because I feel like, I don't know, there's all this pressure to be like a perfect patient and to be on top of your treatment, but like the options for treatment are not fantastic. Like I feel like the effects of medication on me, I mean, I'm quite short, I feel them quite intensely. And so like Prozac was really intense for me when I was taking it all the time. But yeah, there's like not really a better option. And like, I don't know, you don't want your sex life to go out the window. But yeah, so no, it's like, that is what I'm doing. It's not perfect. I wish I could have a better, happier story. Yeah, there's just like, there's not funding. There's not a good treatment plan. So I guess I'd make it work, but it's not perfect by any means.
With the writing of the book, because a lot of the book was, like you've been sharing with us, like over the course of a couple of years of your journey and your experiences, you know, kind of grappling with PMDD, realizing you have it, your relationship, navigating that, but then also going through treatment options and figuring out what works. Were you just writing as a form of therapy, or did you have this idea of the book from the beginning and this was something that you knew you wanted to write?
I never wanted to write this book necessarily. I definitely wrote all the way through the whole experience, because I do my morning pages, I write stream of consciousness. So I had like records of that whole entire time. It was more all the ideas surrounding it that interested me. So like the idea of, when do we ignore women's pain? When does a woman's pain become a pathology? Or is it our society that's kind of a pathology of its own? These ideas really interested me. And then as I was researching it more, I found that it was really hard for me to actually find the experience in all the writing that I was reading. I could find medical texts, I could find institutional texts, I could find police reports, psychiatric reports, I could find all of that. But I couldn't find like the women on the page. I couldn't like find their stories. And I realized that if I wanted to write something that truthfully explored those themes, then I needed to be honestly and vulnerably on the page. And then for me, the book became an exciting project when I read this book on structure called Meander, Spiral, Explode. And one of the chapters talks about spirals as a narrative structure, as a, like an obsessive way of turning an idea over and over and looking at it from different angles. And I was just so in love with that idea that I was like, oh, I can turn this painful experience into this like obsessive vortex and like indulge that repetition that both mirrors like what it feels like to write from like a woman's cycle, as opposed to the traditional narrative arc, which more accurately reflects a male orgasm, like one and done. I can like do something more cyclical and have fun with it and focus on a book that's about the experience as opposed to the institution. So that got me excited about the book.
Because I read it and I did feel that, but I didn't think that. Do you know what I mean? Like I didn't go deep enough to be like, wow, this is intentional. But I did feel that when I was reading that.
Yeah, cool. I'm glad. Like, I have no idea if it is effective or it works, but it got me excited about the process of structuring it. Yeah.
That's really interesting, because I said that to my friend when I was reading it. I was like, I feel like I'm going, like it's kind of, it kept going back. Like I was like, I feel like this is looping a little bit.
Yeah.
And now that makes so much sense hearing you say that. But it kept me hooked. I was like,
oh, I'm glad, because I'm like, there's so many ways that it's just going to be, well, this is a bit repetitive. And it's like, yes, but that is also my experience, is that there's like repetition, and that can be a poetic repetition. That can be coming back to the same idea, but with new understanding. That can be coming back to the same idea with frustration as well. Like it's just and that structure felt really exciting to me.
And so what do you hope people who will go out and read your book, what do you hope people take away from you sharing this part of your story?
I hope that people feel less insane about being insane. I hope that people feel like they don't have to have it all together, that they don't have to have all the answers, and are able to be comfortable with themselves at their worst. I think for me, that's what works best. Like that's how I feel healthiest now, is that like I have like an acceptance that I am an angry person and that does not make me a bad person. Like, I can feel bad things. It doesn't mean I have to do bad things. And I hope that people who read it can see some of themselves in that. I also hope that people can talk about it more without it feeling like this tiny little menstruation club where it's like whinging about your period. And we can actually talk about this as a serious medical issue, and maybe they can make a treatment that will work.
Wouldn't that be nice? Maybe put some funding into research. Yeah. Just maybe.
Yeah.
Emma, I had, such a great time reading it. I related to so much of it, and I think so many other people will as well. So thank you so much for sharing your story today.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.